as well as coordinating HEW's education activities with those of the other federal agencies in the government. And within the Education Division, there are some agencies, we call them. One is called the Office of Education, which is an old agency. It's been in addition a long time. It's run by someone called the Commissioner of Education. One is the National Institute of Education, which is run by a director whose name is Patricia Graham. I think she's at this meeting. The other one is something called the National Center for Education Statistics, NCES, we call it. And they're responsible for collecting and disseminating information on the status and condition of education in the country. And they're always issuing news releases. Like at the beginning of the year, you'll see a statement that so many school children are in school and what their profiles are, and they issue information on the condition of education. Pat Graham's Institute is a research institute. They are the principal research arm. And the Office of Education is a program agency that gives money to states and to institutions, local governments, to fund education programs, usually done by formula. It's a huge check-writing operation, which gives money out to everybody in the world in 120 programs. Then there is the Fund for the Improvement of Post-Secondary Education, which gives money to universities and colleges to use for reform and innovative program ideas that their faculties have. And finally, our newest agency is one called the Institute for Museum Services. And their job is to give money to museums in cities and towns that are having to shut down because they can't afford to pay the heat bills or the water bills or to keep open and have exhibits, and to keep them open so that they can be used for educational purposes. So all of those agencies have people who run them, directors and so on, and I'm supposed to coordinate their activities and to generally supervise their activities, and I'm also supposed to recommend education policy to the secretary and to the president. So that's what I'm supposed to do. Yeah. Sure. How far have we gotten with non-traditional education? At which levels, elementary, secondary, or higher? With non-traditional education, we have not gotten very far at all. And the reason for that is we give support to people in states and local education agencies for innovative programs and projects, and there are a number around where different kinds of curricula are set up, like work-study curricula. Small colleges to set up cooperative education, work-study education, education for people who have union contracts that say that they can get free education, but they need to have it at the job site, and any number of other programs of that kind. Sure. Yes.
Dr. Paula Beals, what is the current administration policy about the National Science Foundation Science Education Department? We have heard some rumors that education was being reorganized in the United States to be under one department. And some of the scientific community is worried that the money for science education programs is going to be buried in this large bureaucracy.
Well, everybody who has any education interest at all or is interested in any constituency is worried about whether their thing would be lost or buried within a department if there were a department. There have been some proposals for reorganizing education in the federal government, and as you probably know, the president promised during the campaign that he was going to create a Department of Education. He hasn't done that yet. It is most emphatically the president's decision to do that, and it certainly isn't mine. I am familiar with, and there have been hearings on the Hill when Senator Ribicoff and others sponsored a bill to create a Department of Education, and they have a majority in the Senate, and I don't know how many in the House now, for that. They've held hearings. One of the proposals does include putting the National Science Foundation, as well as a lot of other things, the Endowment for the Humanities, the Endowment for the Arts, as well as the things that are already in education that I mentioned to you that are in HEW, into a department. Most emphatically, whatever the president does about, you know, the reorganization, there isn't any intention that I've heard about about cutting funds for science education. I mean, everybody realizes that that's an important priority. And in fact, some people have argued that it might be better to have all the education programs in one department if they relate to education. But I don't think that, I haven't seen any serious proposal to just take science education out of NSF, but I don't know what the president will do. We'll have to wait to see what he does.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Are there any programs?
I was looking at you, but are there any what?
Programs.
Yes. In the Office of Education, we have a program for gifted and talented children, which we are increasing our commitment to the gifted and talented children's program this year. And we're also proposing a program for not only for gifted and talented children who also happen to be poor and disadvantaged, too, as another kind of measure. So we do have a gifted and talented program, and it's in the Bureau of the Education for the Handicapped, which might sound, you know, but the Council for Exceptional Children, which includes gifted and talented as well as handicapped, I guess had supported that notion, but that's where it's administered, and it's in the Office of Education. But we do have a very active program for gifted and talented, and are increasing our commitment for that.
Can I get an A-U-S?
Yes.
Thank you.
If you want to know where something is, and I don't tell you, just write to me, and I'll tell you. I mean, yes. We should take it back then. I'm glad you told me that. I really didn't know that.
Well, I'm not really asking you to comment that, but I think it's fairly obvious, but it does bring up a kind of interesting question about partialization and the fact that our kids are whole, schools are theoretically whole. Do you think that funding is going to be more and more segmented in the winter?
I don't think there have been a number of proposals on the Hill in the Congress for funding simplification or for consolidating funding in federal education programs, and that was a popular idea with a lot of people during the last 8 years. The funding that the federal government provides is in areas where there is a national concern, or people think that there ought to be a national leadership, national concern, like the handicapped, or funds for compensatory education for disadvantaged kids. And that seems to make sense because the primary responsibility for funding education is supposed to be at the local level, and that's where the authority is, that's where the responsibility is, and most people don't want the federal government to intrude too much into what they're doing with their local education, although they like to have money. And most taxpayers are not in favor of the federal government taking on a burden of providing general aid to all the schools because they think with general aid may go some kind of control or some effort to control what people are doing. So that the aid has been restricted to certain targeted areas where there is national concern and national agreement that there ought to be some additional support going for some other serious national purposes that are educational but maybe related to it, like you want compensatory education because you don't want kids to drop out of school and to end up on the unemployment rolls and end up as juvenile delinquents and create all kinds of serious social problems if you can avoid it, and so it's considered to be in the national interest. What the local official might have been talking about is that if you are an administrator, you would of course like to have money that you could do whatever you wanted to with it. I mean, any administrator, I'd love to have a big pot of money and then use it in whatever way I thought made sense. But we think that federal taxpayers have a right to see to it that the funds that are provided go to the areas where they want them to go. and that we have assurances that they do, and one way to do that is to target funds. Now, that doesn't mean that we couldn't simplify some work, some of the paperwork, and we are doing that already, some of the paperwork involved in applying for the funds and getting the funds and reporting on the funds. We've just recently announced a program of reducing the number of reports on these various kinds of funds that have to be submitted. And we intend to continue to do that because the aim is not to overburden people with paper, but to see to it at the same time the funds are targeted and directed to where they are determined that there's a need at the national level, since they are national taxpayers' funds. So I don't think we're going to see a trend to end targeting, I mean, altogether. I think most people would oppose that, as they've had in the last 8 years, but you will see simplification. Yes.
What is it you're doing now to
What are we doing to end the sexist stereotyping in textbooks? What we're doing is encouraging people and giving them information and telling them about ways to do it, but we are not directly telling people what to put in textbooks because it's not our role. There is, in fact, a statute passed by the Congress which forbids the federal government and all of us from saying anything about what should be in curricula. It forbids us from doing so. So we can tell people in connection with our programs that are designed to end sex stereotyping and so on about the pitfalls and the evils and give them examples and so on. And we are doing that, but we're not telling people directly what they have to put in the books. So we're trying to enlarge their understanding and provide information to them and assistance in moving toward that objective, but not doing it directly ourselves. Yes.
How often do the proposals go out for funding that they're going to be, and how do you find out about
them? They, that's a good question. We send out news releases that are published somewhere, and we send out information to universities, to their contracts and grants offices, and to nonprofit organizations and communities so that they can have the news release. That's how we do it. And it's usually done in the fall. They have just now, I think next week, they'll be issuing guidelines next week, I think, for next year's round. And they usually do that in the fall. And if you want to know about it, you can just write to them. I mean, write FPSE, capital F, capital I, capital PSE, and ask them, and they will tell you, yes.
If a school district does not advertise that it's a position and just employed from
you file a complaint. The procedure is to, she said, if a school district hires somebody for a job and they don't recruit her, they don't, they just pick somebody they want and they simply appoint them to the job. Is that what you're saying? And then what does somebody do about that? What you do is you write a nice little letter to Dave Tatel at OCR, and you tell him that you're officially filing a complaint that this violates...
Now, case complaints now from all over the country.
Yeah, what we've started... when I say he will, I don't mean that he will personally deal with it, but that his office will. And if you send it there, they will. They will still take complaints now at the regional offices, but they're phasing that out. And in January, we're supposed to end all complaint taking at regional offices, but we haven't done that yet. So you could go to the regional office if you wanted to. Now you could do that. And if you don't want to, and I see you shaking your head, then what you would do is send it directly to Washington, and he would give it to the appropriate person. You might also think first, I don't know whether you have any kind of anti-discrimination laws at the local level, wherever you are, whether it's here or wherever it is, but sometimes people start with OCR when they shouldn't. I mean, if you've got some local employment discrimination board, a committee or agency or whatever it is, it seems to me you ought to go there first. Most school districts have some kind of complaint agency. And if so, why not go there first to see if you can resolve it at that level? It probably would happen faster if it did. You might also simply tell the Board of Education, depending on who's on your Board of Education. In some communities, there are people on the board who will listen to that and who will deal with it at the local level. So I think that it's a heroic measure to immediately respond by going down to file a complaint. And it just takes a long time. Yes.
I think that the thing that has to be looked at is that many times when we're in a situation where we've had Board of Education members call us, minority members of the board that don't have the voting power, and say, you know what just happened. Last night they appointed so-and-so without advertising. And so there is a power vacuum. This is the big problem. But then we go out and say, I file, and my name is in the paper, and they get lots of local publicity. And then no matter where else I might apply for a job, I just sealed sort of my career at that level. So the problem is that we are not getting action, and we have gone to the State Human Rights Commission. We have gone that way too. And now they are taking much longer because many people are waking up to the fact that they're there. And so our complaints are sitting for months and months. In the meantime, the women's papers, the pictures have been in the papers, and they've gotten calls at their central office and so forth, and so that they have no chance to get a position.
Well, I might as well, in all candor, address that point, because it's one that concerns me rather seriously, because I happen to have known someone whose entire career was destroyed because she filed a discrimination complaint. And at the time, in my naive youth, I was encouraging her to do so and saying, that's great, you should go file that. And I don't know, if I had to do it over again today, I'm not sure what I'd do. The point is that if you file a discrimination complaint, you ought to expect the worst possible things to happen. You ought to expect notoriety. You ought to expect people having difficulty getting jobs. You should expect all of that to happen, and that ought to be one of the considerations when you do it, because the system is set up in such a way that people presume all kinds of things about you because you did it, and that has to do with the power relationships that exist, which is the reason why you filed a complaint in the first place. So, I mean, it's sort of naive. It's not really naive, but it's sort of, very risky in the first place. Some people have to do it. They have to do it for all of us. But that is a problem, and that's why people need all the support that they can get from people in the community and need to touch base with people and make sure that they have their support, because it's usually a long haul. And that's a very serious problem. Yes.
I've been involved with the vocational education amendment of 1976, and it's finally down to the state of Michigan level. We have a 5-year plan that has been developed. I happen to see the budgeted monies in the different areas, and Michigan has chosen to zero fund support services for women, daycare centers, and grants to overcome sex bias. I took a copy of that budget to my Business and Professional Women's Club local legislative committee, and our chapter agreed to mail a Xerox copy of this zero funding of the budget to Cheryl Yamamoto, the National Headquarters BPW gal. Would you suggest another procedure? What can we do? Are we locked into zero money for 5 years or 1 year, or what can we do to change that?
What did your state people say? I mean, this is in Michigan, right?
Yes. Well, according to the law, they can mix and match from 15 categories, and they chose the 12 categories that were for men and excluded zero funded the 3 areas for women.
Leslie is saying, you see, because when we were trying to get the voc-ed regs through, that was one of the big issues that we fought very hard to get those categories, because people didn't want to give us those categories to begin with, and we had a big fight in the department.
Cheryl Yamamoto said that 50,000.
What are they doing with their 50,000
from the
sex
act? Oh, everybody has to have that. Everybody has.
They have not selected
the full-time personnel person yet, and in the state plan, they obscured the qualification for that person in the miscellaneous personnel category. Mexico said that HEW wouldn't touch him without evidence, so now she's going to have evidence from Michigan. Will that mean anything?
You send the evidence to
I don't know who you are.
She's Leslie Wolf. She's one of my special assistants.
Okay.
And also, there's a violation of the act.
Well, let me tell you, my women's groups are a little bit afraid to walk out of their own bounds.
Okay, well, don't do that then. I'll just talk to John Porter, and I'll ask him what's going on about it, because I don't understand. I mean, I don't understand, but I'll talk to him and see if I can. You mind if I talk to him?
That's
I mean,
right. We had a very fine black woman who was in charge of our state plan.
And what did she do?
Her name is Lola Jeffries, and she's a wonderful woman, and she's four women. But she was one voice against 26 agencies. And we have another gal, Joe Jacobs, who is our state State Department of Education civil rights woman. Her small voice was a whisper against 26 agency heads.
This is your state. I'm saying John Porter is your superintendent for public instruction. I mean, what I said is, if it's all right, I mean, if you don't mind, I will call him about it. I mean, if you don't, I mean, to see.
I'm a CPA fellow, and my fellowship at Michigan State University is directly from the Volquette Amendment Act of
1970. I see. I understand. I won't mention, you know, but I will call about it. And if you want to send something to us, you can. But I will call him to find out.
And I would like to recommend to many other women from other states, please get a Xerox copy of your state plan for Voc Ed, and if you see zero funding in the state plan for Voc Ed, please Xerox it and do something.
On the subject of bilingual education, what do you see our bilingual students being, say, 5 years from now, considering what is the direction we've got now and how it may grow or
I have no idea. I have no idea. I'll tell you why I have no idea. It's because we just finished yesterday a very long meeting in which we were discussing again all of the elementary secondary acts, including bilingual and the reauthorization, and we have not yet decided what we're going to do. And we have a lot of proposals before us. We're going to increase funding. We know that. For bilingual education, and there will be bilingual education. I mean, we know that. We haven't quite figured out yet what to do about whether there should be some kind of funds going directly to states in addition to what we have or not, and whether there needs to be any kind of new bicultural emphasis in addition to what's already in the act. So all I know right now is that we will have bilingual education. It will have increased funding, but I'm not sure what precisely what we will determine about any new directions for it. And it will be for, we probably will request a change in the language so there's not limited English speaking ability or something like that, but limited English language skills or something. But that's about all I know at this. And we'll have more research and more development and more curriculum materials and more training of teachers.
Mary, would you address the commissioner of Voc Ed? I understand the position is open and has been for 10 months, and they are looking for a woman.
We have in the NOE, in the Office of Education, the bureau job that's still open, we don't have a woman deputy commissioner, is the deputy commissioner for the occupational adult and vocational education. Isn't that what it's called? Yeah. And we have interviewed a number of people. I interviewed three women. We want a woman for the job. Maybe I shouldn't say that. Does that violate something? I didn't say that. If a woman turns out to be the best qualified, we indeed do want a woman for the job, and all the women are very well qualified. And we haven't filled the job yet. We focused in on a couple people, and we really wanted them, but for some reasons associated with their own desires, they weren't able to come. We could have hired a lot of men. I mean, there were a lot of men who were just, you know. But we are going to get somebody for that job, and we have interviewed some people.
We could recommend someone in the office.
Yeah.
If
you wanted to, yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Very much. My question is, a division within the education division that's directly responsible for health education? And are there any really innovative kinds of things going on? And thirdly, in terms of a proposal to do something on a very local level with health education, and I'm speaking specifically about high school, what should be the directions of that kind of?
Oh, you mean health education in high school? I was about to think you were talking about professional health education. I was about to say, no, that's over in the health division, public health service. Health education in high school. Right now, to date, most of our effort and discussion has focused on problems like teenage pregnancy and adolescent and venereal diseases. And the secretary is very concerned about teenage pregnancy and venereal diseases. He feels that he has to do something on these issues, in part because he's concerned and in part because of his anti-abortion stand. And so most of the discussion has been around those issues, and we have some kind of proposal that we're developing to educate kids about sexual matters and about venereal disease and all the rest of that, doing it in our office through the OE program used to be called Consumer and Homemaking Education, maybe sort of using some of the money there for that. But there will be a proposal, a joint health education proposal coming out of that, and there probably will be some funding to do some new things. But as I point out, his emphasis so far has been on trying to deal with those things. Yes.
What do you see as community education? You've had a Community Education Act, yet we seem to get a support not from the adult continuing education field, some from Title IV, Part C. And yet it seems to me it needs to be huge somewhere along the line if the movement is really to have any impact.
Well, that's true, but we've been taking another approach, which is to try to do something with Father Baroni over in Hood, who runs their neighborhoods. He's an assistant secretary for neighborhoods or communities and the like, to try to get them to focus on using community schools for a lot of his programs and projects, in addition to the adult education kinds of things. So that's what we've been looking at, linkages between us and HUD on that. And I think we'll have something to propose on that. In fact, there are staff discussions already about something to propose, expanding the notion of community schools.
I think it related to the things you were saying about museums. I mean,
right, using...
Going out, there's situations coming down.
Right. Yeah.
Is that involved
job fairs
or something?
Beg your pardon?
Job care or
yes, at all levels. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr.